thanks for listening in to swimbetterhq.com podcast today. We're talking with Robert Hamilton from Glasgow, and Robert is the main man behind Discover Open Water Swimming. How are you going, Robert?
Yeah, not bad. Thank you.
That's the way. So tell me a bit about yourself, Robert. What's your history in swimming?
My history in swimming was I swam up to the year that David Wilkie won his gold medal and quit just down to the pressures of school. And I got back into it when I was about 22 doing triathlons. Back in that would be the early 90s when nobody really knew what triathlon was, and then progressed on there to become a swimming teacher.
Okay.
Did a couple of diplomas, both at college and university, and during that time became a swimming coach. And that's now 25 years plus I've been involved in swimming.
Wow.
In all aspects, from learning to swim right through to I had three swimmers at Olympic trials in 2000, all butterfly swimmers.
Yeah, right. So you've definitely been around for a while then.
Yeah, thanks for that, yeah.
Yeah. So what are you currently doing now? Open water swimming, is that right?
Yeah, so we still run a Learn to Swim program. We've got about 350 children a week just now that come into that program. Just in conventional, what would be run of the mill, learn to swim, put your face to water and blow bubbles, and elementary stroke development. And for the last 7 years, I've pretty much put a lot of focus in towards open water swimming, which we've seen an expansive growth over here over the last 4 years. Again, something that nobody really kind of get into over here just because the water temperature is that much colder. But we've seen massive growth, and we've just now taken advantage of that and developed a training and events company, and also a crew support company as well within that, that helps swimmers come across the length of Loch Lomond, Loch Ness. And I was over in Ireland last week taking some across the Irish Sea.
Right, so you more or less, you're taking on not just training people for open water swimming, but the whole aspect of it. So the whole, from more or less running events right through to the, you know, the safety aspect of the events and swimming, having a boat, I'm assuming, beside them during their event, or?
Yeah, so the way that we would like to present the company is, we have a training facility. We've got two training facilities that we use on either side of Glasgow. And you come there for training, whether you're doing a triathlon, an open water swimming event, or you just want to get into the sport because it's something your friends are doing. And then we provide swim events for them from 1K right through to 12.5K. Again, just promoting a degree of achievement for them as individuals, but also then it gives people an idea of the kind of things that they want to move forward with in terms of distance as well. And then we also provide a support mechanism for people who want to swim longer distances, and we'll provide a crew, a boat, a power boat, and a skipper. And they all take to deal with every aspect of that. We just we had somebody on Friday daytime there that swam Loch Lomond in 11 hours and 34 minutes. And then we had two midnight swimmers that went through Loch Lomond on Saturday into Sunday as well.
Right.
So we're kind of providing a whole series of support mechanisms for development of open water swimming coaching. And we also then take to deal with the risk assessments around. I happen to be a national trainer for water safety management programming, which is a certificate for people who want to take on activities in, on, or around the water's edge. And that provides people with understanding how to put risk assessments. So we're also training up other people.
Right.
Because the sport's growing so quickly.
Okay. So I assume, you know, that people don't just, do they do them in these, like these longer distance swims, they'd obviously do by themselves, but you're running enticer type programs where two or three people will go out at once, or, you know, how does someone sort of lead into it? Do they just come and do a 1K, or Or can they actually train and then go out and do their full ocean water or open water swim? Or how does someone actually come up through the ranks?
What you are finding is that people are exploring longer distances as they get into it. So we've got one girl just now who couldn't swim much more than a couple of strokes 2 years ago, and she's been coming regular where she can then promote her, progress through distances, and she's now swimming 5.5K.
Oh, that's
She's
awesome.
only able to come maybe once or twice a week,
Yeah,
so
right.
she's looking to do the length of a loch at some point in the future. And we vary the distances so that people feel as if they can achieve any distance that they want to achieve, and it's down to them aspiring to achieve a longer distance, and we would just support that mechanism for them. And then the guy that we had on Friday there, we swam the 11:34, was an ex-competitive swimmer, and I took him for an hour's session, redesigned his stroke within that hour, and that was about 4 months ago, and he's now just swam 21 miles. So we're getting quite a lot of different types of people. We had an ex-international footballer whose father was very high up in the recognition of Scottish football. His son came to me and couldn't put six strokes together. Within 2 months, he swam 5K and did his first Ironman event.
That's amazing. That's awesome. So you touched on redesigning their strokes. So what is the difference between someone that's, say, for example, a distance pool swimmer that can do, your 1500s, and actually going out and changing their technique and stroke to tackle something like a 5K or beyond?
The thing that's I actually did I stopped coaching swimming from a competitive field in 2004. The thing that I found was having had so many swimmers coming through me, that there was sometimes it was quite prone to injuries, especially in the upper shoulder section.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So yeah, and if it wasn't a front crawl or back crawl, it'd be a breaststroke that would have an issue through their knees. And I became quite focused on how can we achieve a longer distance, or how can we achieve swimming without having injuries associated to it. And I did a diploma in 2004 with the principles of the Alexander Technique, which is an Australian program of head neck back relationship. And I found that to be really, really useful at the beginning. However, in the last 4 years, I became a total immersion swimming coach. And the difference between a competitive swimmer and a total immersion swimmer is the movement comes away from the actual rotation of the shoulder and comes out the line of the shoulder, which means then that they've got a better placement of their hands, but also it takes the pressure off the shoulder as well and stops it potentially causing injury to the upper arm.
I mean, I must admit that's pretty interesting, because you do hear, like, it's seems to be par for the course for swimmers to get bad shoulders, and the worst part is the higher they go into swimming, the more and more you see it.
Correct.
So,
Yes.
you most kids, if they can make it to Olympic level, have got shoulder problems, or as you said, breaststroke knee problems. And unless you're extremely lucky, Michael Phelps, it's hard to keep going once you start to get that injury.
No, I would agree with you, and I think the thing that you find with the distance swimmers is because of the distance that they're traveling over the course of a week or 2 weeks, they might be doing 50, 60, 70,000 meters over a 2 week period, depending on where they are within their training. And to be able to do 21 miles and not to receive any type of injury is quite, it has to be mentally fixed first of all, but then also physically, the articulation around the joints have to be correct the whole way through, otherwise they're going to be in severe pain for quite a long time after.
Yeah, so on that as well, with the mental training, what do you do to train someone and prepare someone mentally to swim, 21 miles or a distance of that length? Like, is it, do you have to do a bit of psychological training with them, or?
Yeah, I think the thing that we do is because we've got a craft right next to the person, the one thing that I say to them is what I want you to do is I want you to focus on me, focus on what I'm doing on the boat, because that makes them drift away and they'll see me moving about the boat, whether that's me taking a stroke count, because we do a stroke count every 20 minutes. And obviously, because they're in water, over here it's maybe a wee bit different back home, but over here, our water temperature at the moment is on average about 15 degrees. So there's a really good chance of hypothermia,
Yeah, of course.
very high chance of hypothermia. So by focusing on what I'm doing on the boat, whether it's me taking a stroke count, possibly taking some pictures and videos of what they're doing, or in preparation of them being fed again. And they'll be fed every hour, 45 minutes or every 30 minutes, all the way through the swim. So it kind of gives them a mental drift that every time that they breathe, they see me what I'm doing, and it kind of helps then detract them from the fact that they're going to be in the water. Because the girl that swam the Irish Channel was in the water for 13 hours, and the girl that swam Loch Ness, which was just 3 weeks ago, swam 18 hours.
And
And
she
mentally.
was the lady that swam Loch Ness. I did read an article on that. And was she a mother of two in her late 30s, was it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
That's
that was me that took her down the lock. Yeah.
unbelievable. And she swam the length of the lock.
Yeah, so that was 39K in 18 hours and
Wow.
22 minutes.
That's amazing. And did she, what was her background? Did she have a long history of swimming in her life?
Yeah, I've known Helen for quite a number of years now, and she started off as a competitive swimmer and never really fitted into that model, and then she progressed on to some events that are run by the governing body in Scotland for swimming, and she's quite a slow swimmer. Obviously, swimming 39K in 18 hours is quite, it's not slow, it's steady paced, I would call it, because each to their own when it comes to the distances. So she's swimming about 1.9 to 2.2 kilometres an hour. Relative to some of the other swimmers, it's a steadier pace. And when she was doing the events, she was always coming in last and felt disheartened, as you can imagine. Went on to do the English Channel, and has actually just finished Loch Lomond on Saturday, Sunday morning, yesterday. Recently started doing some of the national governing body swimming events. Felt disheartened because she was always coming in last because they were always the competitive swimmers, and then ended up on a swim camp because I'd end up conversation with Helen. I ended up on a swim camp and somebody suggested that she should go and do the English Channel, which she then did the following 3 months later, and
So
then
she's
has
done the English Channel as well.
yeah.
Wow.
So you just. I think the thing that you find is that these people are, there's something special about these people and how they approach things. And they almost have a goal every year. So the guy who swam Loch Lomond on Friday, I spoke to yesterday just to make sure he was okay and he was feeling fine. Because you can imagine being in the water in that position for the number of hours,
It
it
would
can
take a
play
big
havoc.
strain on your body, yeah, especially dehydration and exhaustion and everything like that.
So he went away yesterday morning and swam 100 lengths in the pool just to loosen off. So
Actually,
he's 21 miles, it's not long enough.
no.
So he was fine, but he's already saying, do you think I could do Loch Ness? So he would then progress on to doing that for next year. And the girl I took across the Irish Channel, she did Loch Lomond the year before, and the English Channel the year before that as well.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So really, you're finding that more and more people are looking for that more of a push, more of a challenge. Too many people have done the English Channel, and that's a bit passé, so everyone's trying
Yeah, well,
that bigger, better thing, or.
there's a thing called the Seven Oceans. There was a girl from Sweden, she was the first woman to have achieved it, and there was a guy from Ireland who was the first guy to achieve it. And it's swimming all over the world, in seven different parts and seven different oceans across the world. And what you're finding now is that within that market, there's a big drive for people to push forward to try and achieve that goal, is swim the seven oceans in the world. And what they're doing in the interim period of maybe going out 1 year and doing one of the oceans is then coming home or going out and looking to see if there's something else that they could do as a training preparation. And the fortunate thing that we've got up here is that the water's colder. It's fresh water's colder up here. So now what you're finding is that they're wanting to come up the Girral. I've got a phone call this afternoon from a girl in Sweden who wants to come and do Loch Lomond. And it's just simply to get cold water exposure. It's interesting times, and we can see that the growth of just the normal participation levels growing year on year. And I think that will grow and develop the kind of longer distance swimmers in the future as well.
So you were saying they're in a wetsuit. I'm assuming that is that a 5 mil wetsuit or?
Not all these guys are doing it in wetsuits,
Okay.
unfortunately. Unfortunately, we've got the girl who swam in the Irish Channel did it in a swimsuit.
Yeah, right.
The wetsuit people, there's a few brands out there. There's actually a brand that comes from Australia, who promote what would be deemed as a triathlon wet open water wetsuit. So it varies in depth in size, but also then has a buoyancy panel in the center of the chest and slightly down in towards the groin and across the lower back. And what that will do is just give you a better body position in the water, where across the shoulders and underneath the arms, it can go down to as low as 0.8 mil, which gives you the flexibility, but then you've got the buoyancy around the center core that allows you just to sit better in the water, and it just makes it easier for you to be able to carry on. They're more designed for triathlons, but you are finding now that people are coming saying, can I swim the length of a loch within a wetsuit?
So is the area you're working in, is that going to one day develop into an actual competition and records, or are there already records standing for Loch Ness and the other lochs around?
Well, believe it or not, Helen was only 17th person ever to swim Loch Ness. There's only been 56, I think, 57 that have swam Loch Lomond. So the Loch Lomond, it's 9 hours is the fastest. I'm not entirely sure what Loch Ness is.
Loch Lomond, you said, was 35 mile, is that right?
Loch Lomond's 36 km, so it's about
36
1.6
K, sorry.
miles. So that was 9 hours. I'm not entirely sure what Loch Ness is. The Irish Channel on Sunday of last week was broke by an Irish guy. I think it was 9 hours 57 minutes he swam it
Wow, that's unreal. And to
in.
think that there's that many people that are now looking for this, that you're able to set up your own sort of your own company to actually guide people on these swims and train them, it says a lot for the swimming industry as a whole that, people are just looking beyond, going down to the pool for a couple of easy laps. They're actually looking for these longer distance challenges.
It's interesting because if you speak to some of the companies that take to do with stats and the reporting that they've got, there's actually less people participating in swimming in pools. But we are finding that they're coming outdoors and income, what they're actually not competing, which is quite interesting because they don't like the word race. They prefer the word event. It kind of gives it less of a connotation of that you're out there to be competitive and they want to go out and they actually want to enjoy what they see. If you can imagine swimming 21 miles down Loch Lomond, it's just sensational to look at. And there's something iconic about swimming in Loch Lomond and Loch Ness, just because of what they are. And people want to experience that, but don't want to have their head in the water and just knocking lumps out themselves to ground a go around something.
I mean, I must admit, I think I'd probably much rather enjoy it in the boat as opposed to swimming Loch Ness. But
That was cold. That was 11.8 degrees, and the highest it got was 14.2.
oh, that's unbelievable. In where I live, we're lucky enough to have a dam close by, and I can water ski. And we went skiing in full wetsuits, and it was 11 degrees, and that was cold. But we're talking about 20 minutes on top of the water skiing, not actually 9 hours in the water.
Hello. It's a wee bit different.
So do your competitors have to bulk up on carbohydrates for the swim, or do they have an eating plan that they have to follow beforehand?
Yeah, they would generally find their own pathway for bulking up. Ideally, what we suggest is that they should bulk up between 10 and 15 kilograms in weight.
Wow.
Beginning just to accommodate for the cold,
Uh-huh.
and so it doesn't. And what you're finding is that if you look at how a swimmer comes across the water, and a girl who swam the Irish Channel, it was quite interesting because she's white South African,
Uh-huh.
and you would swear blind that she came out as a different coloured person. And part of that is down to the subcutaneous fat layer that sits just below the skin. And how that starts to insulate against the organs so that the body and the core doesn't drop too low in terms of core temperature, because that's how hypothermia sets in. Her body will actually change colour. And Helen, who swam Ness, her whole shoulders changed colour. And you could see it actually as she was swimming, you could see it coming down her arms as well. So, ideally, you want to kind of put quite a bit of weight on. So, you find that they drink a lot of wine, which is always helpful, and kind of eat things. And then the eating plan that they have, again, that's a very personal thing. And each of the plans that we've had over the last few weeks have been so varied. So that they use a carbohydrate drink with lukewarm water, and that just helps with the absorption back into the bloodstream. So it has a better effect, and they'll either eat within the hour on 45 or 30, and depending on the frequency of their eating and drinking program will depend on how much they have of it. And then they'll generally have something, Jelly Babies, Swiss roll, or the girl who swam the Irish Channel, she was eating brown bread with Bovril, and that helps with the salt levels and just keeps the electrolytes in the body fairly balanced as they're swimming through. So yeah, it really is a very, very personal thing. And we do give them some guidance and we do give them some help, but they have to go and try out things. And they have to do, if they're doing a solo swim, they have to do a 6 hour swim on their own, where they go out and they try. And I would be there as watching them. But the idea behind that is to give them an understanding about what settles within their stomach, what's good for them, what's bad for them, and then they can then start building up an eating plan from there.
Okay, so they don't just say, well, I'm gonna eat this, this, and this, this, and this. They've actually had to test out their eating plan before they tackle the bigger event.
Yeah,
Yeah, right.
definitely.
Okay. Well, I suppose on such a large swim, you would need, as you said, to eat every 45 minutes, and yeah, you'd burn through a lot of calories. So, yeah. So how much weight would a person normally lose on swimming, say, the length of Loch Ness or Loch Lomond?
They're probably not lose that much actually on the swim. It's probably after because of because of what's happened, because the exposure to cold water, and the energy consumption during the course of the swim. So the girl that swam the Irish Channel, she's still not recovered from it yet. She's only just done one swim, and that was only a couple of, I think she did 50 lengths or something, which is nothing compared to the fact she's just swam 35K. And she knows her body well, so she has to go through almost like a flu type symptom. Once she gets to the back end of that, and that's just the body just adapting to the fact it's now back on what would be generally normal land air temperatures. And she'll go through that, so she'll have cold sweats, but then be roasting inside. And their kidneys go really cold, and the flanks of the back go really cold as well. And you obviously have to allow that regulation to take place. And that's probably where they're starting to lose the weight again, is at the back end of the swim rather than the actual swim.
So there's a whole range of post-event symptoms that can arise, I'm assuming.
So I've ventured into doing some cold water swimming, Not that it ever gets warm in Scotland, but the thing that I find is that if you, I'm probably spending about an hour in the water just now, relatively close to shore, and it's not because I'm not a good swimmer. It's just that I need a wee bit of security in my head to know that if anything happens, I can get back to shore. The thing that I find is that I'm in the water for an hour. I'm probably using double the amount of calories in that hour than I would if I spent it in the pool. But after it, I feel that I need to consume so much food, and it's just bringing me back up to where I was. And I think it has an effect. Different people have different types of effects.
Yeah, right.
Other people go through really, really severe shaking, almost to the point of looking as if they've got hypothermia.
Okay.
And it's just a reaction to the way the body copes with being immersed into cold water for such a long period of time.
So do you find when, you know, when people get out, do you find a lot of people suffer, you know, big sort of medical issues afterwards, or is it as normally most people get out and they do have those flu-type symptoms for a couple of days or whatever and then they're fine? Or do you, have you had anybody that's had anything more traumatic than that?
I've not had anybody that's had anything more traumatic than mild hypothermia. We ran an event last year just outside Stirling. It was a 5.85 kilometre swim. And one girl came out and said, my hands and feet are really warm, which would suggest that that's hypothermia.
Right.
Because the hands and the feet should be cold.
Yeah.
So, and then the second guy came out, he came out and his face was all swollen.
Okay.
And he, I mean, he was built like a pencil.
Right.
And, but his face looked as if somebody had hit him about 10 times with Mike Tyson's boxing glove. So their core temperature had dropped to 35.8 degrees, both of them.
Oh, that's not good.
Well, it's fine because that's just at the point where they're going to be coming. If it goes below 35, it becomes a bit more serious.
Yeah, right.
But just that's just at the cusp of having the shakes, becoming slightly disorientated, not being able to have a good comprehension around conversation. But if it goes beyond that point, that's where it becomes serious. They become quite weak as they're coming out because they're lying horizontal for such a long period of time. They can become really weak. One of the other signs that they'll have as well is not being able to function properly. So they can't dress themselves. You have to dress them.
Okay.
Having been out of the water for such a long time. The reason that we do that is because they'll go quite slow, and to try and protect them against getting hypothermia. And the blood pressure will change as well because of being horizontal. And then get into vertical. We try and get them to lie down quite quickly as well, at least on a kind of half-seated position with their legs up, so it reduces the blood flow. But that's just part of looking after them once they come out of the water. And after the girl that swam the Irish Channel, after about 6 hours, she was becoming a bit more normal again. Obviously, going through the whole, I've managed to achieve it, I've done it, and being quite quiet at the beginning, to then talking masses and just saying about how much you wonder, how much you love doing it, right through to then becoming a wee bit quiet again. And that'll all happen. But again, that's an individual thing that'll happen to people, because the guy that came out of a moment, you would never know that he'd even swam.
Yeah, right. Because I assume, yeah, you'd have that after you have done something like the Irish Channel, where it's
35k.
I'm assuming you've sort of had, you'd swim that distance, you go, oh yes, thank God it's finished, and then after a little bit you go, oh wow, I've done it, woohoo, you know, and adrenaline sort of kick back in a little bit, and then adrenaline would die off, so you'd go back down again. So that's really, really interesting what you're doing, mate. I'm really interested. That's great. No, it's fantastic. So your company more or less encompasses the whole thing, from training right through to post-event, you know, maintenance and looking after them and the full aspect. So do you get many, like you mentioned before, you get a lady from Switzerland coming over. Do you get many international people coming in and those events? Or
I think what's happened is that when we originally started the company, the focus was pretty much on a local market. And there's a famous walk in Scotland called the West Highland Way, which goes from Ogye to Fort William. And I just approached a loch and said to them, "Can I come and swim in here?" And they kind of thought I was a bit mental. Maybe I was. And it was very much a local market of people. It wasn't, they didn't extend much beyond kind of 10, 15 miles. And then the following year, we were finding that people were traveling that little bit further. And then last year, we were getting people traveling a 100 mile round trip to come swimming with us.
Yeah, right.
And you're just thinking that's crazy because they were only getting 2 hours. But the thing that they were very cautious of was the safety cover. So this is one thing that we pride ourselves on is the not only the volume of safety cover, but I'm also a trainee for first aid, defibrillator, water safety management, and I'm a swimming coach. I've been lecturing in swimming courses now for 15 years. I'm a pool lifeguard. I do all the courses as well. So I've got all the technical side of swimming, but also I've got all the safety side of swimming as well. And then what we're now finding is that people are now starting to catch on. When I was over in Ireland, I've been asked to go back to Ireland next year to help with a training camp. I was down in London at a training camp there, and I've been asked if I could maybe try and bring that camp up to Scotland, which is now going to start increasing our market position. And down to the success we've taken in the last 3 years, we've taken 10 swimmers down somewhere, whether it be a lock or a channel. That recognition now of the support mechanism, and we're getting great feedback from the attentiveness, the degree of what's the right word to use? The degree of care that we look after our swimmers has been so high that people are now starting to ask and coming across from different parts of the world now, which is what I'm really looking for. So that would be more probably into 2017. That we're going to find that we're getting this in the girl that's going to phone me this afternoon. Hopefully, if she's not mad enough, she'll maybe do it in 2017. If she's mad, she'll probably try and do it this year before the season changes.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, I think it'll be 2017 before we really get to a point where we see that international market coming forward.
Yeah. Because I know locally we have a very strong open water, which is mainly ocean water, swimming fraternity. And I'm quite sure there's a lot of people that would love to be able to say, yeah, I swam the length of Loch Ness. At this stage, it's sort of, it's, I dare say not many distance swimmers in Australia would have thought of that yet.
No.
But the idea of, I get, well, let me put it this way. I'm not a distance swimmer. I have no intention of being a distance swimmer. But for me to walk back home into my local and say, yeah, I swam Loch Ness, that's a pretty good bragging right.
Definitely.
So obviously it'd be a seasonal thing for you guys, is that right? Is it only set time of the year, or does it go for longer?
We our season would start as 22 weeks, which goes from the beginning of May to the back end of September. But we do encourage the kind of what I call the mentally vacant winter swimming. So we've swam in temperatures of 1.8 to 3.1 degrees, and we've potentially got this year our first ice mile swimmer wanting to come and do an event with us.
So an ice mile swimmer, what do you mean by an ice mile swimmer?
An ice mile has to be below 5 degrees, and
Wow.
it's without a wetsuit, and it's a pair of it's just a swimsuit, a pair of goggles, and a swim cap.
So are they able, like you see a lot of people that do the channel, they put a covering over their skin. Do they have to do that as well, or?
Yeah, they can do that. again, that's a personal preference. They'll either put Vaseline on themselves or put a lanolin, which tends to help with it, better insulation, and they'll put it underneath their arms just to try and hopefully try and keep the core temperature a bit better across the course of swim. So, yeah. But this will be, if this happens this year, this will be our first ice mile swim.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Like we have people like you've probably heard of the Bondi icebergs. Yep. Well, they're an ocean water, 50 meter ocean pool, but like I said, 50 meters as opposed to, temperature that's 1 to or less than 5 degrees. They're swimming in ocean temperature, which won't get below in Sydney. It probably won't get below 12 degrees. For someone to be able to tackle that, then my hat's off to them, absolutely. So that's incredible. So just starting to wind up a bit. So what sort of what if someone was to think about it, doing a swim like this, what would you encourage them to do first? Like, where would they start, do you think, and how could they sort of, before they actually give you a ring and say, "Hey, Robert, I want to swim Loch Ness," what do you recommend they should do first? Anything in particular?
I think the first thing that I would encourage them to do is try and get as much exposure to cold water swimming as physically possible. Increase their pool time that they're in the water for over the winter, so that they're increasing their aerobic capacity over the winter period. As the seasons start to change, so it becomes summer again, or at least into spring. That what you start to do is where you may be swimming 5 or 6 sessions a week in the pool, that you start to adopt some of these sessions into cold water. So they're getting the exposure that they require, and that's what allows them to stay in the water for that period of time. The other thing that's quite useful is to have cold showers and cold baths, and just aim to reduce the temperature of that water over a period of time, because that will help again with the exposure. And as much as you can, just to try as regular as you can to get that exposure. As it gets closer to the actual swim time, what you have to do with the event or the solo swim might take place, what you have to do then is start doing double distances. So over a weekend, for example, you might find that a swimmer might do a 7 hour one day and then a 6 hour the next day. And that's just so that the body can get used to swimming for long periods of time. And where the body is definitely going to start to get tired, at least you know how it's going to get tired, and that feeding process would be going through that period of time as well. So it's always being looked after all the way through. And just to keep on as much regular fluid intake as you can, and also the food is to make sure that that's regulated, and try and experiment with different types of food, so that people get an understanding of how their body reacts to sugar and salt. And if you're swimming in the sea, what you have to do is make sure that you don't take on too much salt, because you may absorb salt, or you will definitely absorb salt back into the bloodstream because you're immersed in it for so many hours. It's just to watch that balance, because that can obviously upset you individually, and become quite nauseous as well. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah, that's great. So just finishing up, mate, if someone wanted to get in contact with you, what's the easiest way for them to find you?
Well, we've got a website called vigorevents.com. I'm also on LinkedIn and /RH Swim. You can make me contact through there. And it would probably be cheaper to do that than it is to try and phone us, or even just Skype, which is RH Swim as well. And we'll look forward to having some of you guys over here at some point in the future.
Yeah, I'd love to come and sit in the boat, mate, for sure.
Steer it for me.
I'm happy to steer the boat. I've got a boat license. I'm more than happy to do that. Yeah, I don't think you'll be getting me in the water, though. All right.
Brilliant.
Well, I'll put all your details in the notes as well. So, but
Okay.
Robert, thank you very much for your time
No problem.
today. Your time, night, my time. So,
Yeah.
and.